I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This is the Toffee Web Podcast.
Looks like it's going to be Gomez with his right foot. Is it going to be Harrison with his left? Central position, 3 yards from the D. Free kick taken by Gomez!
Yes!
It's a fabulous free kick from Andre Gomez. Right-footed like a rocket shot, and it cannoned in off the inside of the post. Mikalenko for Dwight McNeil. McNeil gets the ball taken off him. And Palace advance down the right-hand side. In it comes, danger for Everton. Driven shot, great save there from Edouard by João Virginia. Palace will feel that they can still keep themselves in this tie. Moving forward down the left-hand side. Chance at the far post at Palace.
Oh, great
an
save.
Opportunity. Driven shot. Good save there by João Virginia. And Everton smash it downfield. Wonderful goalkeeping again.
Hello Blues, and welcome to the Toffee Web Podcast. Only our third of the year for a variety of reasons, not least the paucity of games Everton have played during this bizarre winter break. They have of course filled the gap a bit themselves with an FA Cup replay where they edged Crystal Palace by that fine Andre Gomez goal, but they're not in action again until the 27th when they face Luton Town in the fourth round. Then of course it's a trip to Fulham and three Premier League games in 11 days, and I'm sure the scheduling makes sense to someone. In the meantime, it's never dull off the pitch as the takeover saga runs and runs and Everton face the possibility of going before four different commissions and appeals before the end of the season as they fight two charges by the Premier League of breaching profitability and sustainability rules. Here to go through it all with me, Lyndon Lloyd, are Paul Trail and Andy Howard. Paul, first off, how are you?
Fine, mate. Yeah, not too bad. Yeah, can't complain. Yeah, strange Everton at the moment. It's always strange Everton, isn't it? But it just feels a very strange period at the moment. It's always something going on, but then big spaces between games and then loads of games. And yeah, it's all a bit mad at the moment, isn't it? But yeah, all good here, mate.
Andy, how are you doing, mate?
Well, I'm all right. I feel strangely blasé about Everton at the moment, in terms, not on the pitch, just in terms of all the off the pitch stuff. I know we'll come on to it, but my mate texted me the other day and said, is there a day that Everton don't have a day off? And it felt like that for ages. But I must admit, in the last, with this new charge and the kind of the last bit of this, I've kind of just puffed my cheeks out and gone, "Oh, Everton, crikey! how much energy can I give this at the moment?" And that's not to say that when you watch a match or there's a game on, you obviously that's full blooded. But all the other stuff, yeah. But no, apart from that, away from Everton, absolutely fine. I watched a bit of Masters snooker at Ali Pally last week, which was very good fun. Would recommend that to anybody that likes a bit of snooker. Great venue to watch sport in. Got entertained with a proper 6-5 thriller. So that was great.
Ah, very nice. Yeah, I wonder what fans of like other normal clubs do in this period when there's no football. I mean, because with Everton, there's a headline almost every day.
Yeah, you know. I think that's what he meant. It was he put it on a group where there's a few fans of different clubs, like a Bristol City fan, a Man United fan, a Spurs fan, and he was like, "Crikey, like when does it stop for Everton?" And I was like, "Well, I'm not going to think too much about it, but like I think to everybody else, we're so busy, we're so bizarre."
Yeah, it's just a basket case, isn't it? Anyway, we can touch on the draw with Villa as well as we go, but Paul, why don't you go first on the Palace game, because you might have been the only one to actually see it, seeing as you were there, and it was hardly on TV anywhere in the world as there were no streams. It didn't sound like the greatest of games. Sounded as though it was bloody cold as well. But not one of the best performances. But we're into the next round, which is all that counts, really, isn't it?
Yeah, spot on. I quite enjoy it. I just found it quite amusing that it wasn't on anywhere, and all these different ways people have of watching games now. That just found it quite. It just tickled me a bit there. It was just nowhere to be seen anywhere. That doesn't really happen. But yeah, obviously, I had a good view. It was good. I actually quite enjoyed the battle of the game. Now, no one who was there would ever say, "Oh, wow, you guys who didn't get to watch it, you missed the classic." That wouldn't be true. But in a kind of way, it was classic cup football, I guess. And that, like, neither team obviously really had anything to lose. Them sort of games often about 4-3 or some of that, I suppose. But just two teams having a good scrap, you know what I mean, getting into it a little bit. It was a bit of a battle in there, I thought. Like, there was, you know, the quality was low. Both teams were guilty of surrendering possession quite a lot. Probably was a bit more than Palace, if we're honest. And it was a bit of low quality, but players getting stuck in, a few good performances there throughout. And I thought, obviously, the keeper, Virginia, did really, really well. And again, he did really well in the first game at Selhurst Park. And you thought, oh, he's done great. Maybe we can rely on him. But to back that up again with another really solid performance and clean sheet, perhaps even better performance this time. He had a bit more to do, I think, than he did at Selhurst Park. So really good. Made some very good saves. Really good. Looks composed. So really pleased with him. That's really good. And just good performances throughout. I thought Onana had a good game in there. I thought he did pretty well. I thought Dominic did quite well up front. Bless him, needs a goal, but he did okay. And obviously, Andre Gomez, great to see him score. It was funny, me and my mate, when we got the free kick, it was a wild challenge by the defender, and we got the free kick. And I was like, I saw Gomez and Jack Harrison over this, and I think we had a bit of a joke. It's like, "Well, we know this isn't going in. When do we ever score a free kick?" You looked at me, I said, even when I started going off on a bit of a rant, why haven't we got actually a designated free kick taker? You know, McNeil, with that blase of it going into Rose's head or hitting the wall or something. It was like, we've got McNeil, can put a good corner in, but no one really strikes a good free kick. And then Gomez, he's not going to, what? And see the ball flying. It's absolutely beautiful free kick. So, good on him. So that was really nice. And poor game settled by a good moment of quality, I suppose. And you're into the hat. I think over the two legs, the game and the replay, we've been the better side, I think, over both games. I mean, that's fair to say. And deserves to be. We probably should have gone in through in the first one, really. Pleasing to go in. And it's nice to, another home game and get through that. And suddenly it's last 16. And, you can start to dream a little bit, I suppose, can't you? So good that they're taking it seriously.
Yeah, I've watched a fair bit of it back. what struck me was how competent a side we are without the ball. I think against any opponent now, we look organised, we look really capable of winning the ball back. We've got a great shape. I've very rarely seen Everton teams win the second ball quite as much as this lot do. They are really switched on when they haven't got the ball. The problem is when
I know where you're going with this.
We all know where we're going with this. The problem is when we get it back, and it's just a frustrating watch, isn't it? I mean, that you win the ball back in sometimes such good areas, and it's either decision making or it's execution, or it just looks like the front four or five have never met, and it just all breaks down very quickly when the good sides, and I know when, you know, let's not run before we can walk, but I know the good sides, if they got in half the positions Everton do, they would seriously trouble the keeper. And we just don't. The number of times, watching it back, the number of times last night that we had the ball in really quite dangerous positions, and it's that last bit, but we didn't even make a chance. It's not as if we're missing loads now. It's just that we don't even get to the point of having a chance when really we should, you know, we should have the opportunity to have more chances. You know, the number of times in the first half that the ball kind of just either went out behind the goal or went behind a player or someone took three touches when one would have done. It just, you know, that's the frustration. I mean, I'd back us against anybody. And we've seen that, I suppose, over the last few weeks, haven't we? To stay in a game, to be, you know, to be well set up, to get the ball back, to fight, to, all those things that will make us a decent Premier League side halfway up, probably. But, you know, they desperately need to work on what happens when they get the ball. I'm sure they are. But I mean, that is because, you know, the game could have been all over. You know, if we had one or two real top executors in that final third.
Yeah, I find myself thinking that on a virtually week-to-week basis right now. You know, just comparing how other teams function in the final third compared to us. And I think we can merge this one into the Villa game, because that, I thought, was a really creditable point, obviously, against what was the second-best team in the country at the time. But the performance was pretty limited going forward. I mean, the contrast between the two teams, who were more or less in the same state just before the last World Cup, when Villa sacked Gerrard, but we kept Lampard. I mean, it's kind of depressing. But I mean, I know where we are. I will say that Unai Emery inherited a better team overall. I think he's got more quality in the team than he inherited. Villa have recruited really, really well. They've obviously got, you know, a top striker in Ollie Watkins. But they were superior to us in all departments, really. I mean, maximum effort being the minimum requirement is great, of course, but it also can't be the ceiling either. I mean, at some point, you need to play football, and we're just not doing it enough. And so, you know, I thought Villa were actually far better at what is our main game plan, which is hitting the front quickly with a direct ball. They were finding their players in a way that we just weren't. And as you said, Andy, the number of times that a ball just is lumped forward and it just ends up, you know, either going into touch or behind the opposition goal line, it's annoying. But I mean, I just have to keep reminding myself that this is going to be another grind of a season. We've got a small squad that's been asked to do an awful lot. But I do worry about the quality of football we're playing, because, you know, obviously the effectiveness of your performances and the results you can achieve are kind of tied to how well you can actually move the ball around and as you say, create chances or not. So when I'm thinking, I'm trying not to think too far ahead, obviously, because you've got so much crap to get through on the pitch, off the pitch, before we can even get through this season. But longer term, Sean Dyche, I want to see some evidence that we're going to improve, and not just sort of, you know, by acquiring new players, because Lord knows we're not going to be able to actually buy another player at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I'd still always caveat that of, you know, we're head and shoulders above what we were about a year ago.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. Yeah.
And you got to let him, and he hasn't really been able to manoeuvre in the transfer market, has he? And that's the thing. He's a lot to deal with. And maybe we've got to kind of accept that this might be as good as it gets at the moment. I take your point. I mean, you've made the point quite a few times on this podcast, Andy, of we've only got to get to that position of one more pass before the pass, which would be the goal, if you know what I mean. And it's just like, so it's just so fun. There was so many instances of that last night. It was a bit, it got a bit ridiculous, really. But is the common denominator here, is it the lack of Abdoulaye Doucouré? Now, I know he played against Aston Villa, but he looked pretty rusty to me, and obviously being back, he wasn't quite up. And you think he's been available throughout the time he's been available? Somebody maybe out of the stats on it. I feel like Everton created so many more opportunities in throughout nearly all the games, I think, throughout the whole season. Now, since he's been out of the team, the goals are really dried up.
Yeah.
Okay, we're doing well defensively. The Wolves game aside, I suppose. 7 clean sheets in 11. That's really, really admirable. They're doing really, really well to keep teams out. But yeah, I think the news that Doucouré is going to be out for a little bit longer again now is a worry to me. You know?
Yeah.
I've always thought Doucouré is a very, very, very frustrating player, but the numbers don't lie there. The goals and assists that he's provided, and just nuisance value and effort and determination. Yeah, I mean, all them things. And it's not necessarily perhaps the things that he's doing on the ball that are helping us create opportunities. It's the positions that he's filling, the work he's putting in, the distraction and the thought that he's got to occupy defenders with. So I wonder. I'm not saying, oh, he's back in the team, is suddenly going to start creating 6 good shot opportunities a game again. But I think it's a real loss, I think, at the moment, and we're just going to have to find a way to figure that out without him. And it also doesn't help it that Dominic's obviously not putting the ball in the net at the moment either. You know what I mean? So the sources of goals are really hard to come by at the moment. And we can't go on just relying on a superlative Andre Gomes free kick here and there. You know what I mean? It always feels like, to me, the weight seems to fall on Dwight McNeil an awful lot of, like, if he's not the guy who's going to whip the ball in for Dominic or whatever, then who is? You know what I mean? If he's not the guy who's going to take it and just smash it into the goal, then who is? You know what I mean? And it's, you know, we just need more. We need more throughout, I think, I guess, in that department. We need kind of everyone, really, to be chipping in a bit more. There was a stage when Mikalenko was popping up with goals. Now, he shouldn't be your main source of goals. Garner hasn't scored for a while. Vanfrey hasn't scored. You know what I mean? Just, yeah, Tarkovsky. You know what I mean? I think we just need a bit more from everyone, really, if the striker isn't scoring the goals and Doucouré is not available. So that's a challenge for Sean. He's got a bit of time to work on it, I guess, and think about it. But yeah, that's really, because we'll be in danger if we don't find a way to start scoring goals. We can't rely on players being available all the time.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, we keep a lot of clean sheets. It's going to be the odd game when we don't. And you know what I mean? So it's certainly something we have to address, and more composure around the area would, I guess, be, yeah, would certainly help that. But having your best players available is obviously going to be the big thing there.
I think what Doucouré does is he adds chaos. You know, if you look at the scenario last night, you could see Everton's threat. If you were Palace, it was all quite obvious what we're going to try and do. I think Doucouré adds a level of chaos, uncertainty, unpredictability, which instantly starts to pull people around a little bit. I don't think it's his decision-making or his poise or his creativity or any of those things. I'm not sure he's got any of those things. I think what it's lacking in general is a decision-making in general, and then a confidence from making the right decisions. You know, I think if Everton scored a couple of goals that went forward with a bit of fluidity and was a quick passing move that all of a sudden, oh, there's a bloke there to tap it in, fantastic. You know, I think if we did that a couple of times, you'd get the confidence of doing it. Where it looks like they are at the moment is that they're doing everything brilliantly to a point, And then because it's gone wrong a couple of times in the final third, everyone tries to do this thing that they may not be, you know, au fait of doing, and it just breaks down. Or someone doesn't make the run because they think, well, am I going to get the ball? It, you know, it just feels like we're kind of, we're just stuck behind between a rock and a hard place in the final third at the moment. That's how it feels. I suppose even within that, if you've got a Decore in there as well, it's an extra body. It's someone doing something a bit off the cuff, which sometimes helps. But I think we've said it for a while, haven't we? We lack a natural creator, someone to pick a pass. And because there's not been a natural creator in the team, players aren't making runs for a creator, you know, and that's been the problem, really.
Yeah. I mean, I think some of us were looking, maybe James Garner could be that player, but he just doesn't seem to do it regularly enough. But I think you're right about Decore. He is that natural link between, obviously, the midfield and Dominic Calvert-Lewin, and we haven't got anyone who fills that role quite as well. And Jack Harrison is... he's a really interesting player because he's so important to how we play defensively, but he's very frustrating as an attacking player because it's so much of what he does doesn't come off. Whereas with Decore, sometimes it just seems to, you know, by hook or by crook. And so I think, yeah, if he's going to be out for another, I mean, I know the rumor was another 4 weeks. Let's hope it's not that long. But if it is, I mean, he would probably miss three really important Premier League matches. So we've got to find someone to fill that role. It doesn't seem as though Danjuma is quite the number 10 type. Harrison, as I say, you know, sort of buzzes around and leads the press really well. But again, he's not that player who's going to consistently unlock a defense or partner Calvert-Lewin in the way that we'd want. So it's a bit of a conundrum. And I suppose we assume that no one else comes in before the end of the window on loan. I know we're kind of looking at the loan market. I think the speculation around Hannibal, who's just gone to Sevilla, suggests that, you know, if there's an opportunity there, we'll take it. I hope we do. But I don't know, we just feel so short of options. That's the thing that concerns me, is so few ways to change things.
Yeah, we've banged that drum a few times, haven't we? Yeah. It's just I don't think there's many more limited squads that we have. We can put if everyone's fit, we can put a good 11 out.
Yeah.
But we don't have an awful lot beyond that, really. So that's the big problem we got. I think as well, asking Garner to do the job a bit further forward. I mean, in the absence of Idrissa Gueye, who's going to be on for a little while, he's got to do all the defensive work. If Gueye's there, go on a complete the team and drift forward a bit, but yeah, I mean, so it's another body where we're limited there, so it's going to be really, really tough. But again, they've got to find a way. Sean's got a calm head. I think he will find a way. I trust him to sort of work with what he's got and find solutions. So just have to say, I think the break's come at a good time now, and I think the game being a cup game after that, I don't know how interested Luton will be either. It could be an opportunity to sort of, you know.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, it could be an opportunity there to maybe, you know, work on a few things, or, you know, put some of the things you've worked on into practice. Ashley Young's back soon. Now, it could be an opportunity, I guess, to play Young further forward. And I think Harrison's best game for us was perhaps against Newcastle when he was more in midfield. I thought he had a really good game there. So maybe that's a solution of sorts in the interim. Who knows? But he might want Young at right back, because Coleman could be out for a while again too. It's wherever we look, it's difficult. I thought Patterson did quite well last night as well, by the way, just as a bit on the side. I'd like to maybe see him trust him a bit more. But
it's funny, I'm laughing because it's funny. Patterson, I've seen the opposite opinion, and I've also seen the complete opposite opinion about Onana. Like, people say that Onana was terrible last night, and then the other half are saying that he was one of his best games. It's so bizarre, isn't it, how people see it?
what I'd say with Onana, and now I've always thought Onana's got good qualities. He's obviously a good player, and at quite a young age, he's got a lot of good attributes. But it's only the last few games I've really noticed him sort of take more responsibility in games, I think. And he might have always done this. I don't know, and I've just more recently noticed. I'm not sure, but I think he really takes care of the ball well. I think he's one of them players, like, when the ball's coming to him, he knows what he's going to do with it before he gets it. Well, yeah. A lot of our players, they get to it and then just a Gaze example, you'll get it and then they go, oh, now what do I do? You know what I mean? Like, whereas he knows beforehand, he's a step ahead and things like that. He's got a lot to do. He's got a lot to learn still as well. But he's probably the best tackler at the club as well, I think. So he's certainly got a lot of good attributes. I think, I don't know if I'm probably, it might not be a popular opinion, but I think he's really kicked on. And that might not be demonstrated by goals and assists and whatever else, but I think his general play overall is very good. I think if he's got Idrissa Gueye in there as well, I don't think there's a lot. Maybe he takes more responsibility and gets forward more. So we have got players there. It's just figuring out a way, isn't it, with what we've got? And that's what he's going to do. We've got a lot of good players. We've got good players. Just need to find a way to sort of manoeuvre them around, I think. And the good thing is a few of them show a good degree of flexibility as well with positions. So, you know, not all's not lost there, but yeah, it's just going to have to work hard on solutions and hope that there's no more injuries. That's going to be a big key issue.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's become he looks more and more like an assured six. You know, as you say, just receiving the ball off the back four, knowing what he's going to do with it, being the prime tackler when Idrissa Gueye's not there. And if that's the case, then that solves that issue when Gueye's not there. And it should free the likes of Garner up to then do more work further forward.
I think it's something that Al was saying quite a while back, actually. I didn't really agree with him at the time. So no one's best should be in a six. I was like, he should be more favour forward. He's got more capability. But yeah, I think he's right, actually. He certainly... If I didn't think he was right then, I do now, because I think he's matured a fair bit as a player in that time. I think he's really sort of, I think you're right. That'd be his best position at the moment. But let's see how he gets used.
It is unfortunate that that Young has been out, that may have freed somebody up to be the Decore replacement when Decore's not there, like a Harrison, or, you know, could have tried that more often. I even think it's unfortunate, and I don't know how the details of this the deal would have panned out, but he probably would have thought that Delhi would have played a game or two by now. Mm-hmm. And it's the one we always forget. Yeah. I mean, I don't know whether he would have played six by now or whatever it is that he has to play before we pay anything. I don't know how that would have worked. But I would have by the way that Deitch was talking, and actually the way Delhi was talking, I would have thought, especially by now in maybe one of the cup games, or that we would have seen him. And he is definitely that player that's neither a midfielder nor a striker.
Yeah.
That can actually do both. That could have been really useful just for 3-4 games to have had the option of bringing him on, or, you know, so I think that's unfortunate as well, you know.
He's had two major setbacks, hasn't he, Delhi? And I think if you'd asked Sean Dyche at the beginning of the season, he would have pinpointed maybe the turn of the year, the new year, as kind of have him really sort of fit and raring to go. And the fact that he's kind of broken down twice has wrecked all those plans, I think.
Yeah, I don't know whether we'll ever see those 5 or 6 games. But yeah, that's unfortunate. I would have thought, even in the summer, the thinking was, well, you know, we know that he will be back at some point. There is a period of time that we could play him for. He could take some pressure off the squad. But that's just not come to anything. So, and I still maintain that if he was back and fit and focused on football, that you would struggle to get anybody better for the money we owe Spurs.
Yeah, it's true. It's frustrating because you really want to see if he's got his head right and he could actually be even halfway to the point that he was at his best.
Yeah.
You know, that's the annoying thing, is you kind of think, if you've got your head right, mate, and you can get your body right, then he could be some player for us. But I think I agree with you, Andy. I don't think we're ever going to see it, because he can't get fit.
No.
Sad.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't feel like it, does it? Yeah, it just feels like it's another breakdown. Yeah, it is a real shame. I'd love to see him get a few games, even if it got to a point where, oh, we're safe, we're fine, and, you know, just what the heck, give him a few games. It'd be great, wouldn't it? But yeah, you're right in that he would he would be in a position to really contribute at the moment, I think. Yeah, certainly. I'd forgotten about him myself. I just think of the Corey not there. He'd be perfect right there, wouldn't he? Just behind Dominic. So we can see it at some point.
Annoying. Off the pitch. Another independent commission looming. I thought we'd be okay this time around, and that we'd done just enough in the last, you know, the last financial year to sneak in under the wire where PSR was concerned. So I was a bit surprised when the report came out the night before from David Ornstein that, you know, we were going to be referred to another commission over alleged breaches. But then I suppose if you look at the fact that the two combined COVID years are still there, it makes sense that if they said we were over last year, then by their numbers, we're over again this year. And it's important to kind of correct what the Premier League said about Everton, confirming that they're in breach. Everton haven't confirmed that they're in breach. They just said, we've had to submit the numbers we've had to submit that show we're in breach because of the way that you ruled last time. So, I mean, you know, everything obviously hinges on the appeal. But, you know, so we've got this overlap and the stuff that the Premier League aren't allowing us to claim in mitigation. The biggest nonsense here, though, is the double jeopardy aspect, isn't it? And this idea that not only could we be punished for the same period of time twice, but we could also be hit with 2 points deductions within the same season.
I don't even know where to go with it anymore. I mean, it's, you can just go. I just feel like you can just kind of go a little bit one at a time, really. I mean, I'm really not trying not to think about the second breach and just see what we can do to, you know, it's like sort of damage control with the first, isn't it? To see what can we bring back? Can we reclaim? I don't know what would be seen as a bit of a win now. You know, 5 points back, something like that. I don't know. And then, you know, and aren't they feeling that they can negate the second breach with their appeal for the first one? That will, I guess, be utopia, I guess, if we can half the punishment and quash the second breach in doing so. Then I guess give us an extra 5 points and you think we'd be more than fine. I would have thought with whatever that plus whatever points we get in the remainder of the season. I mean, watching I'm sure you've both seen bits of the sort of commission hearing with Masters the other day, and you know, you'd like to think that our, what's his name, Mr. Silk, the QC, the lawyer we got there, you got to think if he's looking at that, if he's as good as he's supposed to be, he must be licking his lips at that. You would have thought, thinking, well, I can really get after these. I'd like to think so, anyway. We don't see what happens. We don't know how it works, really, do we? So that's it's kind of just, we're just hoping, really. But I do think, looking at it all, and I'm trying not to be too biased, I do think Everton have got some grounds for some, factors for why, you know, mitigating circumstances for why, you know, why we are where we were, which we don't need to go into. You know, yeah, we've been through them before. That, you know, the stadium, the, you know, Usmanov not being able to provide was a massive thing, obviously, because of the sanctions. It just pulled everything away in terms of the finances, and we're so hamstrung with the stadium costs due to that. Yeah, and there's a few other factors too. So I think they've got grounds there. I feel there's good opportunity to get something back from that. And like I say, if they can squash that while doing it, then fantastic. But it's just so depressing, isn't it? It's just like, I don't know, it just feels a bit raw this time. You know what I mean? It does feel like, you know, you try not to get too conspiracy theory about it, but then you can't help but think, like, are they really coming after us here? Is there a problem with just us? Have we done, you know, have we done something particularly wrong to it? You know what I mean? It just, I don't know, it just really sucks, you know what I mean? And just get a bit so fed up of it. And it's just with that and the takeover or lack of takeover, there's nothing you can really do to affect the squad, really, or anything, really. You can't do anything, really, at the moment until that's done. So either way, you know what I mean? So it just feels real limbo at the moment. And going a little off topic, kind of, and that, like, if a fast forward to the end of the season, and we've survived and all that. Like, God knows what happens with the squad. We've got a lot of players going out of contract. We've got a lot of, you know, what can we do? Can we even sign players upon contracts at the moment? I've got no idea. Who could, you know, who can make these decisions? What can we do? So it's, I really worry about the future, regardless if we stay in the league or not, due to what's happening with the, or a lot of what isn't happening with the takeover either way at the moment as well. So I'm a bit more concerned about that than the breach and what happens with that at the moment. But yeah, it's a real sorry state, really.
I remember when the first time around when there was a breach and reports of a breach, and then it was off to some commission and committee, and I remember feeling quite kind of uptight and quite anxious about it, and thinking, oh my word, what does this mean? And oh no, we're here again, we're going to be down the bottom and blah blah blah. And then we got the 10-point deduction. I remember that being a day of shock, really. When this came about the other night, I hardly felt a thing. It was weird. It was almost like, oh, whatever. Just, you know, just get on with it. Just, what you know, yeah. I mean, I don't really have any, it's been so strange. I'm really, because people ask you about it, don't they? People say, oh gosh, Everton are in trouble again. And when you go, yeah, I think they expect more. I think they expect some kind of dramatic speech. And I just don't feel that at the moment. I just, maybe I'm naive. I am naive. I know I am. But I maybe I am definitely naive in that I think from the outside looking in, even as an Evertonian with all my blue tinted glasses on, I look at it and think, surely, there will be some common sense in amongst all this at some stage, because this seems so absurd that we're the only team to have ever been pulled up on, apart from Forest, obviously, but, you know, the only team to have ever been pulled up on anything like this. And then we're pulled up again in the same season for a different time period, for all the reasons that Paul has just outlined, and there are more, aren't there? You just think, come on, like, this seems scattergun. It seems like they're making it up as they're going along. Like, there's no real rules drawn out. Well, there are rules, but there's no punishment drawn out. So if you break these rules, then you don't know what's going to happen. And it just so happens, of course it does, that Everton are the first team that get punished. And I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm lucky. Maybe I've just got into a position now with it where I'm not stressed about it, because I just think, well, all I can do really is watch the team play a football match. If we get 3 points or we're through in the cup, then that's some kind of, you know, offset against something that's going to come down the line at some point. I don't know. I don't feel anxious about it. I just feel completely and utterly numb and dumb with it, really. Just get on with it. Just, if you really want us to be relegated, just make sure it's done. Let's just fast forward. I just,
yeah, we're like Sisyphus pushing a rock up a hill, isn't it? we just can't seem to get out of it. I mean, it's a shame that Richard Masters isn't going to be the one that our super silk KC is going to be grilling, because I think he would probably, there'd be lots of holes to exploit there. I mean, he, in that committee hearing, he was fairly sure of himself on the rules. And the rules, I mean, the rules, and he's right, the rules are there. And Everton and all the 19 other teams at the time in 2014, whenever it was, voted those in. I think you're seeing that the practical implementation of those rules is nonsense, because you can get punished. Ordinarily, I think it would be, what, 66% of the time period, because we've got that double COVID year, it's 75%. So we can get punished twice for the same time period. And it's all so retrospective. I mean, we're talking 3 years hence now, which is 3 managers ago. You know, it's transfers from 3 years ago. Most of the people involved have all left the club, and Mashiri's got one foot out the door. So really, you're punishing the people who are left, most notably the players, the current manager, and the fans, of course. with what I think we've all agreed, and it seems like the rest of football agrees, was a ridiculously harsh 10-point penalty, given the fact that Portsmouth were docked 9 for actually going into administration. And we were, you know, in breach by 20 million. And these mitigating circumstances were just kind of just brushed aside by the commission. When I think that the thing that I keep coming back to is there ought to be a level of latitude and some common sense here that isn't being applied, because the Premier League have said, you are in breach of the rules and you're in breach by this much. And they're trying to do it as black and white as possible, when it's really not that black and white, particularly when you look at the fact that we have a net spend of, depending on how you calculate it, either 28 to 54 million over the last 5 years. And Chelsea have spent over 750 million. So, yes, they are technically not in breach, or they may eventually be found, you know, guilty of whatever Abramovich was up to years and years ago. And City may eventually, potentially, probably not get hauled up on one of their 115 different charges. But the fact remains that they continue to be able to go out and spend whatever they like. And Everton have effectively been in a transfer embargo for 3 years. This season, we're probably going to, the number of places that we will lose in the table will amount to about a £20 million fine, you know, penalty. And then obviously you got the 10 points on top of that. So it's just, I just can't get past the fact that it just still seems like an inordinately harsh punishment when you stack it up with what happens in the rest of the Premier League. And as L keeps saying on Twitter, is the fact that Manchester United are allowed to carry £1 billion in debt purely for the fact that there is someone out there like a sheikh who will pay £5 billion and wipe all that away. So in terms of sustainability, in quotes, Chelsea are fine because, you know, someone will pay billions for them, and United are fine, Liverpool are fine. The big six are fine in terms of sustainability because of their commercial revenue and just their basic worth. Everton don't have that luxury. And as I said, we've got ourselves into a massive hole through the actions of a few people, most of whom were gone. And it was years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and there's a sad thing about it. And Sean Dyche alluded to it on, I think, Monday in his press conference. We've had to sell young players off. You know what I mean? Which you might be able to. Like, is it Samuel Smith? Is that his name? The really promising left back.
He
might have had a game or two this season. Like, he certainly would have been on the bench. That Hunt's on the bench, I'm sure. He was on the bench last season, so I'm sure he would have featured by now this season. Tom Cannon, he looks a promising player. You know, really started had that injury this season at Leicester. He's really sort of going well. Looks a very handy player. He could have been a player we could have, you know, really liked to have kept hold of. And we just haven't been able to do anything like that. You know, we had to sell players off, not be able to spend them. As you say, and we've covered this before, and now and. We've done all this work of sort of working with the FA and having them ratifying transfers and that. Like, we might as well have just kept hold of a Charles and say, or whatever else, or just, you know, because could the fine have been any worse? You know what I mean? The point deduction, sorry, but any worse? You know what I mean? So yeah, I hope they can just present themselves properly, and obviously we don't get to see any of this, of course, but just hope they can just make the best case of themselves this time. We don't know exactly what happened last time, but that they've got, you know, that they changed to this really sort of top drawer lawyer to sort of represent them suggests that they're really sort of, you know, trying hard with this, or at least put a lot more focus than maybe they thought last time. I would be okay, or we're not going to get it. It's not going to be that severe. I don't know. Maybe they weren't as bothered about it for some reason. I don't know. But like, they seem to be much more bothered about it now. So that's the first hurdle we've got to overcome. Let's get that. And in the meantime, Sean Dyche's got to carry on protecting the players from it, and on the pitch, just keep on eking out results. And it's just real sad. And yeah, you're right, Andy. You would like to just fast forward it, really, and just see what happens with it, because it's no fun, is it? You know.
I tell you what, about fast forwarding, and the thing that I've got in my head now, and I keep coming back to it, and every time I think about like kind of the future, it kind of gives me a really uneasy feeling, is the ownership thing. And I hear and read a few things that says, oh well, you know, there's always the stadium to sell off. There's always the stadium to sell off. This, the new stadium, I mean. And I don't know why. I've just got that going round in my head like kind of like a carousel at the moment, that that we could go all the way through this build. We could actually be penalised for the build and all the associated costs that go with it. And if the new owners or whoever comes in decides that the best thing for Everton Football Club is to sell off the new stadium and effectively rent it back, I think that would be absolute, that would be tragic, really. And I don't know, I'm no expert. I don't know what it would need to come to get to that point. But that is the one thing that I have allowed myself to kind of get worried about is that, you know, if we've looked forward to, well, we haven't really. We haven't had the opportunity to look forward to a new stadium because it's just been chaos. But if there is this thing that's apparently going to be a real positive and move us on and put us hopefully into a different, on a different standing, for that to effectively not really be ours, I get worried about that. And that's slightly off tangent because that's nothing to do with really the deductions or anything, but it's just, I think it just shows the kind of depth of what we are worrying about at the moment. And it's not football, is it? It's not us scoring goals or having a, I don't know, look at, you know, like the good old days. Remember when we used to talk about the kind of the games and
yes,
and our favourite players, yeah. And you know, I don't know. It just, that's the depressing bit for me.
Yes, where the game is, isn't it? Speaking of the ownership, anyone have anything to add on 777 Partners and this never-ending takeover?
No, not really. I just can't look at these guys in suits and caps much longer. Well, I don't know. I mean, part of me wants them to be having to look at them all the time. At least that'll mean it's sorted either way. I don't know enough about it, obviously, but I don't really know what I want to happen, to be honest with that. You're hearing so many bad stories about it and about them and what they've done. You think, oh, I'm not sure I want these guys in charge of us, but we need a resolution.
Yeah.
Either way. Yeah. So they want them to go. Part of me thinks, okay, well, maybe it's not as bad as everyone says. Come on, let's give them a chance and here you go. The other part of me thinks, oh, get shut of these guys. Let's get another, you know, surely somebody else wants to take it on. But we can't stay on in this limbo. We just can't, because I'm right in saying they've got exclusivity as well. So it's not like we can do anything else. We can't just, like, you know, in the meantime, we're stuck. We can't do it. And if the FA is saying, oh, it's going to be weeks and weeks until we know what's happening with that, then what the heck are Everton supposed to do? You know, it feels like getting punished every which way at the moment. It's
yeah. Yeah. There's nothing the club can do right now because as of September, Mashiri effectively has sold it to 777 and they're just waiting for the green light from the Premier League. And obviously, if they don't get it, then we revert back to Mashiri still being the owner. So no, we can't. Mashiri, you know, there's probably someone talking to someone, you know, outside of the agreed sale, just in case it does fall through. But yeah, it is just a limbo. And I don't know what to think about these people either, because the stuff that you hear about them on the financial side is truly frightening. The way that they handle their business, the number of people who just don't end up getting paid or they get paid late, you know, they do seem to sort of have a habit of coming up with the money in the end, but not before the likes of Vasco da Gama and Standard Liège have transfer bans imposed by FIFA. Or you know, or their local, you know, their local footballing authority, as I think was the case in Belgium. You know, I mean, that's got Everton written all over it. You know, more transfer embargoes and all this kind of thing. But on the football side, you know, with they've got Don Dransfield, I think it was, who's the ex City Group fella. They seem, and they've got that that really highly regarded sporting director, who's kind of the head of their global football operation, who I think would take part or actually a fair part of Kevin Thelwell's responsibilities if the takeover goes through. I mean, they seem to have their head screwed on there. And in terms of the football clubs and their performance on the pitch, they do seem to be doing okay there. but that's not going to help if the financial side of their operation is, you know, about to fall off a cliff. So it does seem very dicey to me, very dicey.
Yeah, I don't know what to think. I mean, I've not got the insight or the knowledge to know much about them, but everything I read about them is quite negative. Or not everything, but you know what I mean. Business wise, it is. But it's a bit like what Paul just said. I mean, do you kind of do you rip the plaster off and you know it's going to really hurt? but in a couple of days, it might be a bit better for it. Or do you kind of keep the plaster on? It's quite a poor analogy, but you know what I'm saying. It's
well, just, what, which is which in that analogy?
I would say ripping the plaster off is probably 777 getting in.
Right.
And in you just, you know, it's going to hurt, and it may not, I don't know, there might be some pain short term until you actually see what's underneath. But then, I don't know, by keeping it on, you're also... It would be brilliant, wouldn't it, if the Premier League actually made a decision anytime soon, and that it was relatively quick, and it was a no, but there was Mr. and Mrs. X, Y, and Z behind it, ready to come in, who were in a good position to take the football club on. I mean, that would be the ideal scenario, but that involves a decision at some point. Which doesn't seem to be forthcoming. I mean, what is the delay? I mean, it's either yes, these guys can run a football club, or no, they can't. Surely.
Well, it seems from what Masters said was that they haven't received the information that they need from 777 Partners to be able to make a definitive decision. In which case, surely at some point you say you either deliver it now or you just can't. You can't.
Yeah. And in which time they're actually paying for they're paying for running costs of the football club anyway, aren't they?
Yeah, £142 million so far,
loans
with more to come. I mean, if it's going to be a period of weeks, and let's say weeks is a month at least, that's probably another £20 million, because that's how much we need on an ongoing basis just to keep the stadium financed and the lights on.
So surely it's in their interest to give the paperwork over.
If that's the holdup, yes, you would think so. But I don't know. It's all just so murky.
Do you know what? When I was, I've been on a week of early shifts, and that is very early, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And sometimes when you're driving a car at that time in the morning, your brain just wanders.
Yeah.
And I was listening to something the other morning when I was driving in to work, and I thought to myself, how many people would it need to each give £1,000,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
to get hold of Everton? And the math is, you know, it's a lot of people, it's millions of people. But I mean, I thought, can the Toffee Web podcast start some kind of
GoFundMe?
GoFundMe, like on speed. Can we do this? I reckon I could find £300 to start. Let's go. I thought, crikey, I mean, obviously that's an absurd idea, but like, surely at some point there has to be a plan B.
Yeah. If every person who went into Goodison each week, so 40,000 people gave 1,000, then obviously that's 40 million. That, you know, you would need 10 times that to get Mashiri's supposed asking price, which... If 777 get rejected, then that's going to have to come down, surely, unless there is someone waiting in the wings. But
well, that's it. If that price really comes down, like, I don't know, like, look, what, like John Henry bought Liverpool for example. You know what I mean? Like, it's there might be people that go, oh, I don't know. It's quite like, I don't know, you're playing Monopoly, and like the person that you're playing against, like, completely broken, just like at the, you know, like a few times, they're just definitely just saying, yeah, like, all right, I'll take Houston though for £20. All right, yeah, you know what I mean? It's just it goes a bit like, you know, I don't know. But like, just as you were saying, like the it seems to be able to just like find money when they need to, these guys in their sort of different sort of guys at different different clubs. Have you seen that documentary, the Fyre Festival when this.
Yes. Yeah. I haven't seen the documentary, but I know what it's about.
Yeah, it feels like that guy who's just like, you got to pay for this festival and like in the Caribbean somewhere. Blink 182 are going to play, and the guy and operating costs just keep spiraling out of control. So the guy would disappear for a few days, come back with a load of wedge of money, and they go again. And eventually, it just all went to crap. Which isn't, well, if that was the analogy I was looking for, it's probably not a good one. But like,
I don't know though. But this is the thing; it does have a whiff of that.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
It does. I don't know.
So Everton have got 3 million followers on X, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, I'm gonna dismiss 1 million of those as hangers on, they're
bots, you know,
yeah, exactly. And a few journalists here and there. Okay, so 2 million. Could we find 2 million people that are willing to put £500 in a pot?
Well, how many of them 2 million are rich as well? You know, I mean, like, you know, there's Wayne Rooney still followers, you know what I mean? Could he could do more than a grand, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you know what I mean?
So, yeah, maybe based on
that's not bad shape.
Based on, you know, zeros in your bank account should be how much you're expected to chip in. So
£500 each, 2 million people is £1 billion.
Oh, easy then.
I could keep us going for about 3 months.
Yeah.
There we go. It started then. Okay.
There you go. Start. You start the GoFundMe.
The 18th of January, we're off and running. 2 million. Well, actually, 1.99997 million to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone just. I'll put my bank details. Everyone just pay it into me, please. And well.
Yeah.
We never saw Paul again.
Oh. Well, yeah, let's just hope something gets resolved soon, because it's just, I mean, it just can't drag on. Anyway, let's do a weekly question, and let's see. We have Andre Gomez to thank for the fact that he scored the first direct free kick that an Everton player has scored in 4.5 years or something, which as I was listening to it, as he was lining it up, I was trying to think back to the last time we'd scored. I couldn't think of it. So thankfully, you know, it's come out since that it was Luka Dean. But Paul, your favourite direct free kick scored by an Everton player?
I think like the one that everyone sort of loves in like relatively recent years would be like the Leighton Baines one against Newcastle. It's such a good hit, isn't it? It's just beautiful. But one I'm going way back to 93-94 season when Andy Hinchcliffe scored a free kick away at QPR and won us the game, 93rd minute or something like that, and a 3-2 win, a very important win because we're really battling relegation. Obviously, that's what we always thought. Yeah. But it was such a, yeah. And I think then as well, we never really scored free kicks. We never really have, or at least like, maybe I've gone through little spells of scoring, like Arteta hitting a few in and stuff like that in later years. But certainly back then in 93, 94, we didn't really have, you know, who you'd have a free kick, you wonder who would take it, Peter Beagley, maybe. Fecky, yeah, something like that. You didn't really have too many real options. And seeing Hinchcliffe sort of whip one in like that was so important. Yeah, the days when you'd listen to it on the radio, which everyone's just had to do the other day, and then just catch it on Match of the Day later on. It was just, yeah, I remember waiting up as a young lad and like waiting up for it, and just like, still remember vividly what a great goal it was. So that was probably still my favourite free kick, Andy Hinchcliffe.
I think I was in Amsterdam when he scored that.
Oh, really?
In this tiny little hotel room with a tiny TV in the corner. Yeah.
And the game was on.
I was watching the highlights.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, the first thing I've got written down here is Baines Newcastle away. But, I mean, you know, I think that we can probably accept that between the three of us, that would be very, very high. One of the earliest free kicks I can actually remember and sticking in my mind, for some reason, Alan Stubbs scored one at Stoke in the FA Cup third round. And I don't know why that sticks in my head. We won 1-0. I've just checked, actually. We won 1-0. 2002, I think, something like that. Which I don't know why that sticks in my mind. That was notable, but I think I'm going to go. The one I reckon is the best, and it's probably only the best because there was one before it, was Baines's second at West Ham.
Mm-hmm. That's mine too.
Is it?
Well, just for the audacity of it. Mm. You know, I mean, to have done it once,
yeah,
putting it on the other corner.
Yeah. Just so I think in isolation, it's of course, yeah, it's a brilliant free kick.
Yeah.
The fact that he's already done the first one, yeah, just makes the second one like, oh my word, what's this? Yeah, oh, sorry, I've taken it off your tongue there.
No, not at all, because you know, we both have the same idea, which is fine. It's like you say, it's just the audacity of it, and he was just so impudent with it, you know.
Yeah.
Was so.
I mean, we haven't had a great kind of bank to choose from in recent years, no, have we? I mean, Arteta scored a few.
Yeah.
I saw the Lukaku one the other night.
Against Palace, was it?
Against Palace. Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
Good free kick. But no, we haven't had masses to choose from in recent years, really.
No, and it's a shame because, sorry, Paul, I was going to say, some teams have, you know, it's almost like a penalty for them. Like, you know, you get Ward-Prowse up there and it's all of a sudden you think, oh, shit, he's going to score it. But we just, I mean, honestly, the number of times that either McNeil, Ashley Young or James Garner has put it into the wall on a routinely basis. So it's fantastic that Gomez actually stepped up and smacked one in.
And to think as well, I can never recall seeing Gomez try his luck with a free kick. And I think, you think back, he's had a lot of injuries, hasn't he, the last couple of years? And before that, I guess he was in a team where he had Luka Dean, he had Sigurdsson, he had Richarlison. Yeah, I mean, James Rodriguez, other players who, you know, who'd get the nod ahead of him, obviously, to take the free kick. So maybe the answer's been there all this time, and we just haven't been letting him near free kicks. One mad one I thought of as well, which I just really like devilishly liked, was 2004-2005 season. Thomas Gravesen scored a free kick against Bolton. And he gave me 1-3-2. He scored to make it 2-2. I just loved it because if you ever watch it back, it would never be allowed now with VAR and all that. But Alan Stubb just bulldozed a couple of players off the edge of the wall, which created a massive gap, which Gravesen obviously wouldn't have scored if that wouldn't have happened. It's just the shithousery of it was quite good, but yeah.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that, I mean, what Gomez has scored 4 goals for us in his time with us, and 2 of them have already come this season, like within the last month. So it's fairly ironic that he's showing his best stuff now when he's about to leave. But if you look back at his Valencia days, the YouTube clips of him when he was Valencia, he was an incredibly gifted player, which is why, yeah, I was so excited when we were going to sign him, and we just haven't, for whatever reason, just haven't seen it enough, you know, in a blue shirt.
Let's hope he has a kind of a good 5 months.
Well, we need him to.
Mm. Yeah.
He could be a huge player for us. You know, just keep him away from our box. That's all, yeah, I'm saying.
Well, especially in, you know, in the role he played last night. You know, if he's got 2 central midfielders behind him,
yeah,
who have good legs and whatever else, then maybe he can be the decision maker that I was on about. He can be that player in the final third if and when we need him.
Yeah.
In which case, I was thinking about it today, actually, you know, if that is going to be the case and he is going to be fit and he's going to be available, it's still much, much, much cheaper than kind of trying to find someone else to do it, you know, because he's already here and you've got to pay him, 5 months more wages and that's that. I mean, I know it's a lot, yeah, of money every month, but it's still not as much as it would be if you had to bring someone new in, probably. So, yeah, you know, now he's here and starting to come back into the team, you know, I hope he does as well as he possibly can, and then we get the benefit at least at the end of his contract.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll finish this episode with some words about John Hurst, who's passed away, unfortunately, at the age of 76. According to the announcement on Everton's website, he'd been ill for some time, which is sad to hear, and I actually wasn't aware of that. Paul and I were lucky enough to spend an evening with Joe Royal and Hursty, as Big Joe called him, back in 2018, was it, for a dinner that Dr. David France hosted at the Liverpool Cathedral. Actually, it was a lot of fun to see them, to see the two of them banter with each other all evening. And John's wife was telling us how he and Joe still used to meet every week for coffee, like clockwork. So, I mean, it was a great evening, wasn't it, Paul?
It was a really nice evening. Gallifavoli on the table as well, didn't we? And a lot of Roddy Goodluss was around. A lot of ex-Everton people and people associated with Everton. It was really really a privilege to be there. And yeah, they're really good company, John and Joe. Just you could see them as like mischievous young lads, couldn't you? And they were still just on a mischievous side to them. All you know, full of quips and jokes, and just real nice people. And the other halves too were really, really, really nice. So sad to hear that about John, because obviously I never had anything to do with him since then, you know, at all. But it was just some people you just remember fondly. And he was a really nice, warm fella. And hope his family are all okay. And nice to meet him just for a few hours.
Everton have put up a lovely black and white photo of him, which obviously says 1947 to 2024 John Hirst, but it's a black and white photo, and you can the backdrop looks like the kind of the Bullens Road stand, I would say, but you can just tell it's Goodison. It's wonderful in a way. You've got a black and white photo which is quite close up of somebody, and you can just tell that's Everton at Goodison. It's a lovely photo.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's the part of Browning Moor Dock so far that I don't think we're going to have. It's going to be instantly recognizable. And I keep saying it, I keep sort of putting it on Twitter, and hopefully some other club will pick it up, is that I want something inside the ground that you know immediately from pictures and maybe a quick replay that is Everton Stadium. Because, you know, just to have that, the backdrop of the Archibald Leach, you know, the crisscross design, you've had it behind Pele, you've had it behind Eusebio, or Dixie Dean, all these greats. And it's, I mean, to lose that, I mean, I don't know how, you know, what you'd replace it with, really, but anyway.
Yeah, that's a good point. Lovely photo, that of John. And yeah, isn't it on the Twitter? Yeah, it's a, nice photo.
Yeah, our condolences to John's family and friends and everyone connected to at Everton who knew him. But that's it for us. As we mentioned, we've been trying to record our annual quiz, but various circumstances have prevented us from doing that so far. But perhaps we'll try and get together to do that in this next strange hiatus that we have from Everton being in action. Failing that, we'll be back after the FA Cup fourth round tie against Luton. Until then, as ever, Blues, thanks so much for listening. Take care and up the Toffees.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.